welcome, Tom Kazaya, to a discussion about a book that you have just completed and, as I understand, will be coming out and made available next week.
Yeah, it'll be July 16th is the publication date.
Okay. And you're going to be in town, in Palmer, for a book signing at Fireside Books, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later on. But right now, Tom, the title of the book is Pilgrim's Wilderness, subtitle, A True Story of Faith and Madness on the Alaska Frontier. First question, how did it come that you are the person who wrote this story?
I was the reporter for the Anchorage Daily News in the year 2002-2003 when the Pilgrim family first showed up out in McCarthy and started causing a ruckus. This whole story started with a bulldozer in the national park out there, and sounded like a good news story to me. As a longtime reporter up here in Alaska, I'd always been interested in, you know, stories of, you know, renegade 19th century, you know, holdouts fighting against this sort of modern environmentalism that moved to Alaska in the 1970s, 1980s, and so that seemed like a interesting variation on that old story. And after I talked to the patriarch who called himself Papa Pilgrim,
right,
he just sounded like a very interesting character, more than I had realized, and I really wanted to get out there and see him for myself, see their lifestyle that he was proclaiming, and just, you know, get a closer look at it. And as it happened, I had a cabin out in McCarthy myself.
Oh, okay.
My wife and I had had a place out there for some years outside of town, and so I knew the community pretty well, and so I was in a kind of a unique position in that I was writing both as a journalist and as a, you know, semi pseudo local. I'd never actually lived out there, but you know, I was, you know, I had a lot of friends who could sort of give me inside information, but I also had that journalist's authority to kind of go around asking nosy questions that you're not supposed to ask if you're living in a small community. I mean, I could be a little more full of questions than
sure.
others. So I was sort of in a unique position to be able to end up writing this story, which is really a story about the community and the national park as well as it about the family. But once I got out and started talking to the family, I kind of tumbled down the rabbit hole at that point. I realized this is way more than just a story about a bulldozer mm-hmm. and national park policy.
So I'm curious because I'm reflecting today, it being the summer, middle of the summer, and it's a very warm and beautiful day. I've been to places in the winter and I've been in the summer. What time of year did you first get out there to have your first face-to-face encounter?
My first visit out there was in August.
Okay.
And I went out with my family to the cabin and took a, you know, couple of work days to go into town and then meet the family and then ride on horseback up the McCarthy Creek Valley about 13 miles to the copper mine and mill site where they had set up their homestead. And they were kind of the only family up, living up in that valley, and they had it to themselves. And they wanted to show me the fact. They wanted to point out the fact that this bulldozer through the national park had actually been clearing, as they said, an old wagon road that dated from copper mining days. And so, in their view, they were simply opening up access that had existed before the national park was created in 1980. Of course, the valley had changed, and there'd been huge floods, almost like biblical floods, actually. Right as the park was being created by Congress, there was a huge downpour, and it washed out all the bridges in the remaining bridges in that valley and eroded away the road. So he was kind of making up where he thought the road might have been. But there was something so sweeping about that happening just as Congress changed the legal designation of the valley that I thought that was a kind of an interesting twist. But there are all these kind of, you know, big moments that seemed like written by a bigger hand that seemed to intrude in this story here and there.
Now you were having most conversations with Papa Pilgrim, the father, or others as well?
Well, it was mostly, you know, about the family was with Papa, but once I got out there, I was sort of trying to peel the kids away, and because there was a kind of a clammy feeling about the way he had tight control over everything that went on in the household and his 15 children, and the way they watched him closely to sort of for cues on what they should be doing. Mm-hmm. And but I'd peel the kids away and talk to them individually, and they would always, you know, they were really, you know, personable, nice, and they would insist that everything was really good, and that they really liked the way they lived, and they didn't feel, you know, put upon or anything. And that was the message that everyone was putting forward. So it was really hard to really penetrate what was happening out there at the time. So I wrote some big stories, and they mostly talked about this eccentric, slightly weird family, but very colorful, and their fight with the park, and you know, it had a big political aspect initially over, you know, property rights and national park policies.
I remember that quite well. It appeared certainly in the media as something that generated a lot of discussion on, if you will, two sides. People sympathetic to the Pilgrim family's work and others that said that they still needed to follow a certain amount of regulation.
Yeah, and that, of course, made it, from my point of view, a much greater and more interesting story, that there were, you know, arguments to be made on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm trying to refresh my own memory. You, of course, have a lot more detail. There was the original discussion, the original focus on access to the land. Then, was there a period of time before the revelations created a different story?
There was, you know, it evolved in McCarthy over the next year or two. The kind of strident and pugnacious attitude that Papa Pilgrim had toward the national park began to be applied more generally toward a lot of his neighbors, and in the end, even his allies within the community, the people who were supporting him, he would turn against them. He seemed, in retrospect at least, to have a need to make enemies and kind of hold his family together because of the external enemies that he would, you know, proclaim against. And even people who had gotten to know the family pretty well, or at least thought they knew the family pretty well and liked them and supported their cause, found themselves expelled. Meanwhile, the family had set up a camp in the middle of McCarthy, basically, on a public right-of-way, and it was just one of these sprawling camps of chickens and goats and an old bus and trucks and oil drums and a Wanigan on a trailer there, where they had their sort of town camp, and it was you know, parked right in everyone's face. And eventually the town kind of came together in a kind of miners meeting frontier justice and marched on their camp and said, "It's time for you to move. We're tired of this." And at this point, he'd pretty much antagonized everyone in town. It was only after that, and after they were really more isolated than ever that following winter, that things took the big turn and the family secrets started to emerge.
So now, in that intervening period between your original contact and the later revelation and kickoff of another story, how much contact did you have with them? Were you still, you obviously have a cabin in that area and so on. What was happening?
Well, I continued to do newspaper stories as there were developments. You know, after my first big stories, there was a lot of support rallied to them in their fight against the park. The park had cut off their access overland, you know, in summer, going up that that road with a bulldozer, and so there were property rights activists, including some, you know, support from the lower 48, who were actually flying supplies up to the family, comparing it to the Berlin airlift. And so that was all, you know, big news, and I tried to cover that. There was a period where I was pretty much cast out of the family's approval. I think Papa didn't like the fact that what I had written in my first big stories about the family, because I had not only talked about their present, but I had discovered all sorts of things about his personal past and had spilled that out in the public eye. And so he really came down hard on me. You know, they would hang up as soon as I would call the homestead. And, you know, and then we got on the phone once and was really just berating me, talking about how I had, you know, turned against him and how could I do that, and this was not true and that was not true, and didn't I know better than to double check. And, you know, I was really getting pummeled and realized this is what it must feel like to be in a cult. It was creepy.
Mm. Okay. So then we have the revelation, and at what point did this turn from a series of news articles and continuing contact to something that you saw as moving in the direction of something much deeper, or even the book itself?
I guess the two issues are connected. But, you know, people asked me after the first big profiles of this eccentric family, was I going to write a book? And I told them at the time, no, I need to see what the last chapter is going to be, because there's going to be something more coming out. And it was a few years before it came out.
Okay.
And even when it came out, it wasn't, it didn't really come out at first. It was all very hush-hush secret. It took months after the daughters escaped from the homestead before they were willing to go to the Alaska State Troopers and talk about what their father had been doing, especially to the oldest daughter. And it was only after they finally were persuaded to go to the troopers that they were that there were indictments and a manhunt for Papa, and eventually it all came out in public. Well, not all of it. I mean, very little came out, actually. Initially, it was 2 years after Papa Pilgrim was arrested before there were any details emerged during his sentencing about what he had actually been doing to his kids, and not just to the oldest daughter, but he was there. All we knew was he was charged with rape and incest and kidnapping and all sorts of horrible crimes. And eventually he pled guilty to those. So there was no trial, but there was a sentencing hearing where the children all stood up and bravely spoke about what had happened and what it meant to them and how they were trying to get over it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when it really came out. And I guess after that, I began to think about a book, and it was really, you know, it was hard to think about it as a book, as I said initially, knowing that there was more to the story. And then when it first came out with the charges, they were so dark and it was so creepy that I wasn't sure that I really wanted to spend my time writing such a book. And it was really only after I heard the kids speak in court and got to know them better and started to hear their stories and understood how, you know, strong and resilient they had been, you know, in spite of this incredible upbringing of isolation and no outside information ever kind of reaching them. I was so impressed by them that I thought, wow, that's kind of the surprise ending here, and this is a great story. And it clearly was a great story. It had so many twists and turns, and it, you know, I just had to say, okay, this is the story I've been looking for. Because it also talked about Alaska and wilderness and the coming of conservation and all those other big settings. You know, if it had just been the story of a family that turned out to be a cult, I'm not sure that by itself would have been a book, at least a book for me, but the setting and the spectacular landscape and the history and all made it a much bigger canvas.
Okay, so now you are ready to paint that canvas, and you've had time to have done some research. As you were continuing on and writing the book, were the members of the family forthcoming in terms of, did you work with them to get information, or how did the sourcing work for you?
That's a good question. They were surprisingly open to me as a newspaper reporter in the last days of his case. Surprising in the sense that they felt almost a public obligation to speak out about what had been going on, because they felt like they had been misleading the public for so long by being who their father wanted them to be rather than being who they should have been. So they had a kind of compulsion to speak out, and that was great for me, and they liked what I had done and how I had treated the story. So we had a good relationship at that point. Let me just say one thing is that partway while we were waiting for this trial for 2 years, at one point I heard the story from someone off the record about how the girls had escaped on snow machines into the wilderness when it was time for them when things had reached the point where they had to make their break in spite of conviction that they would lose their souls, that they would be condemned to hell forever by rebelling against their father. They had to do it. And it was so dramatic that I just kind of spent the next year trying to figure out how I could get that story on the record. And by not pushing it, eventually they said, okay, what else would you like to know? And I said, well, tell me the story of the escape on the snow machine. And so that's really the story that opens the book. After that, then I came back to them as a family, not only to the Hales, which is the Pilgrim's real name, but to the Buckingham family who live in Palmer and helped, really were kind of crucial in helping these kids escape. And I sat down with them at dinner and told them I was interested in writing a book, and they had talked about that and said they didn't want to participate in a book about their life. And I was, I was disappointed at first, but then thinking more about it, I realized how difficult it would have been for all of us if we had tried to do something formally, because they would have had to struggle to reach some sort of consensus version of the events, which would have been really difficult for them and difficult for me as a writer trying to negotiate. So in the end, I talked to a number of them over time. It was over several years, got to know them better, and some were happy to talk and others not. And so those who were happy to talk, I was happy to listen. I also got through a Freedom of Information request extensive investigative files on the criminal case, coming well after their father had died in prison. And so those files, even though they were redacted, were full of information about what had been going on, and it was sort of fresh information because it was transcripts of their conversations when they first emerged from the wilderness and were talking to the Alaska State Troopers. So that information, combined with the anecdotal information that I got from some of the kids and from the mother, Rose, were kind of the two main components for going back and telling the story from the beginning of what it had been like to grow up inside this wilderness family.
So how many years from your first contact until now, when the book's being published, have passed?
I guess 10 years. Yeah, right. 10 years. It was 2003, and here we are.
Yeah. So I just
finally coming out.
Right. So and of course, when we talk about things taking 10 years to have happened, What sustained you in writing that over that time?
Well, I was, you know, I stayed with the Anchorage Daily News until 2009.
Okay.
And so, you know, I had a job, and I really wasn't aiming it as a book, really, until about the time I left. So, you know, I think of it as, you know, 3 to 4 years of working on the book.
Okay.
He was sentenced finally in 2007 and died in 2008. So it was only after that that I began to think seriously about doing this as a book.
Have you had an opportunity in recent time to have contact with members of the family now that they're living in primarily the Palmer area?
Yes, I have had some contact. Not much very lately. I sent them all early galleys of the book, and they've read it, and I think they're not all that excited about having a book come out, and so to some extent they've withdrawn a little bit, and I, at least for me, and I think that's, you know, perfectly okay and understandable and even appropriate, that they, you know, want to be guarded and they don't want to have a, you know, a media, you know, just have the media descend on them to for interviews and that sort of thing, and that's fine. I'm not real intimately in touch with what's going on in the family these days. But they've done, you know, amazingly well considering where they started. I think it's hard for them, and especially hard for some more than others. But they've done well, and they've kept their faith, which is really amazing considering how twisted the Christianity was that they were brought up under.
So I'm curious what you think the effect of writing this book has been on you.
Well, it gave me a good project to. I tended to write long feature stories, or enjoyed those the most, for the Anchorage paper, and worked for the paper through, you know, the golden years when there was travel budgets and time to get out and spend time on stories. And so I really liked being able to go several layers deeper into a subject and think about it. And it's been fulfilling in that sense. It was hard because in places the story was so bleak, but like I was saying earlier, the fact that the kids were able to pull themselves out of it and rescue themselves when nobody else, including me, the reporter, nobody else was really able to see what was going on or rise to the occasion or reach out a helping hand. Nobody except finally the Buckingham family, when they found themselves in the midst of another Christian household that was very different from the one that they'd been raised in.
Well, that's a very interesting point, yes. Well, we're talking here with Tom Keziah about a book that's about to be published or appear in your local bookstores, Pilgrim's Wilderness, A True Story of Faith and Madness on the Alaska Frontier. Tom, we've been going almost 30 minutes. Any last comments you'd like to make about the experience of doing this book? Or, for that matter, anything about what you see coming up next for you?
Oh, I think it's going to be interesting to see how this book carries forward for a while. You know, there's a tendency for Alaska books to get pigeonholed as regional color, and I'm hoping that this one will have a national audience. It's been, you know, published by Crown, which is a division of Random House in New York, and it seems to be getting some, you know, national attention so far and good reviews. And so it's going to be just kind of an interesting summer to see if it breaks out of Alaska and what that might mean, you know, for the book.
Sure. Okay. Well, Tom Keziah, thank you very much for taking the time to have this conversation. And just a reminder that on the 24th of July at Fireside Books in downtown Palmer, you'll appear for a book signing. What time?
I believe it's 4 o'clock is the current plan.
Okay. Very good. We'll see you there.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks for your interest.
Yep.